games on the game.
All the games.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and this is Winner's Bias, America's first, best, and only board game radio show.
Oh, until proven otherwise. It's the new year, I forgot.
Yeah, way to be on the ball there, James.
Yeah, want to restart? No.
Crushing this intro. Winner's Bias, a show about board games and getting out of the house every now and then. I'm your host, Nate, and with me is my buddy, James. How are you doing, James?
I am tired. It's been a long winter. Holiday, if you can't tell by my messing up already.
I mean, that's just the status quo with you, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, someone's got it.
All right. You can comment on our show live using the OLARC messaging system on kboo.org. Just click on the chat button in the lower right corner of the window. We're here today with Jesse Damon of Community Connection Gaming. Jesse is also a Twitch streamer, and perhaps most importantly, a former KBOO programmer for the Monday Sampler and a Radio Geekly, and almost proved us otherwise with the latter show. So welcome, Jesse. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's so exciting to see just how some things have changed and some things haven't changed here at the Mighty Boo.
How long has it been since you've been in the station?
In the before times that we call pre-pandemic. So 2019, I want to say.
Okay, great. And do you want to tell us a little bit about what you used to do here?
Yeah, absolutely. So for those that were familiar with me, I went by the name Just Jess on the Monday Sampler. I hosted with Matt Fortunato, and we brought in local bands and interviewed folks and did some radio plays and things like that. And so we were kind of like the kooky Monday afternoon show. And then also I had a fine collective of volunteers and things, and we created a Radio Geekly, which was a show that was contributed all to all things geek. So anything from video games, tabletop games, comics, cosplay, all of that kind of stuff. And that ran for a little while, I want to say a few years. And then we did also some radio plays and things like that. So it was a lot of fun. On the other side, you might have seen me doing engineering because I also have an engineering background. So I was a part of the engineering department for a while, did some Blues Fest, did some pledge drives, all that kind of fun stuff. And also, Nate, I was a little bit on, I wore your hat for a time because I did some pretend Ani time, as I called it, as a volunteer coordinator for a while. So yeah, I was all over this station. So it's good to be back.
I know. I feel like we should just switch positions and for old time's sake.
Yeah, you could probably do a better job.
No. You're doing fine so far.
Better job than me.
Yeah, I was going to say, who's the one who just screwed up? Yeah. I'm usually the one that screws up the intro. Stop getting in on my territory.
Sorry. I'll take it back a bit. All right. So you said about you do a little, the Community Connection Gaming.
Yeah.
So can you tell us about what is that and how did it start?
Yeah, absolutely. So probably around the same time that I was heading out of KBOO, I started getting into tabletop games. My husband and I were really, really into just playing things together, and he dived into the rabbit hole that was hobby board gaming, which I describe hobby board gaming as those that aren't really mass market, that you won't see them at like a Fred Meyer or a Target per se, although that is changing now. But it wasn't anything like a Monopoly or a Scrabble or anything like that. So he was diving into those games and he wanted to build kind of a way for us to build friendships and community and things like that. So we started going to local conventions and game stores. And I mean, Portland's just like ripe with game stores. I think we're one of the most fortunate cities in the country just to have so many game stores. I mean, you could probably throw a rock and you'd hit a game store. So from there, when we went to these conventions, I started noticing there was kind of a discrepancy between players who identified as me. And so I identify as a woman and as a person of color. And so I did not see a lot of people who looked like me at the gaming table. There were, unfortunately, a lot of white cis males that were there at the gaming table and not necessarily inviting for people like me to come and sit at the table. Fortunately, my husband is a very supportive person, and so he was always wanting to make sure I felt included, so he would be there with me at those moments. But I thought, you know what, I just need to do something for myself. So I created this gaming space where I would actually host game nights for people that don't identify as a white person or as a male. or as a straight person. And so I would bring those opportunities for them. And we would actually bring our own games from home, created a library, and we'd be at the local game stores. We'd be at the conventions and things like that. From there, it kind of sprouted into me getting connected with people within the industry. And I found a couple people wanting me to be working at convention booths. And so I was able to go nationwide. I went to my first Gen Con in 2019. And for those that aren't aware, Gen Con is one of the largest tabletop gaming conventions in the country. And so that was my first ever kind of like dive into tabletop games. It was like drinking from a fire hose. So from there, I was able to kind of grow and reach out to people that were identifying to me. And I found that there were a lot of people that were in these underserved communities that just needed voices. So we kind of just band together and grew from there. And so it was really, really awesome those first few years. And then the pandemic happened and everybody had to do a shift. And so we shifted from an in-person space to an online space. And that's where I kind of get into Twitch streaming. And I found that just by happenstance, by like, where can I go to stay connected to all my gaming friends? And it just happened that everybody's going online for things. So I looked up how to do a Twitch stream, and a lot of people were just using their phones. They didn't have a lot of technology and things like that. So I grabbed my iPhone and things. I rallied together some of my gaming friends that were here in person, created a Patreon for support and things and whatnot. And from there, I grew to have enough funding to have more equipment, to bring more people in. And what I did is I just played tabletop. I just recreated what I did in the before times as like a community space of teaching games and playing games together, but just in an online space. So I was just... I acted the same, just like, welcome to my table, here I am.
So were you playing solo games, or were you bringing people in and you were all streaming in the same room, or were you streaming like online plays? What's it look like?
Absolutely. So it was a combination of a lot of things, actually. So I did some solo gaming, I did some digital gaming, but what was really neat about having the Twitch community was that there was a way for us to essentially make like a giant Zoom call. So we were all playing the same game. So we would all have it set up and each take our individual turn, but you can see how the game would be progressing just with our top-down cameras. Or we would play games that are called Rollin' Rights or Flippin' Rights, where only one person would need the game, and then everyone else would have their own player sheet and they can play along.
Okay. And now, I'm a person who actually does watch board games online, but I know when I tell people that, they think, why would you watch people play board games online? And I feel like there's a similar thing with people playing video games.
I mean, yeah, I used to do it a lot on YouTube, watch people play video games. I don't do it anymore because I don't have the time, and I'd rather fill it up with me playing my own video games. But yeah, it is a bit of a hard thing to explain.
Yeah, but so like, what do you think is the appeal for watching people play games online?
I think it is a way for folks to visualize and try a game before they buy it, in a way. Board gaming hobby can be a very expensive hobby. So having someone have things out to the table and see how actual gameplay would be and be able to ask questions in real time, because with the glory about Twitch and YouTube Live, for example, is that people can actually ask questions right in that moment. And so they could ask, you know, a rules clarification or something like that. Would this be good for my kiddo to play? Like, what is the age range? And so they can kind of get a little insight and a research on those games before they try them. And also there's a way for folks to kind of see what some things are coming out, because there are some folks that don't have the means and the privileges to go to these large conventions. And so with the benefit that I had and the thankfulness that I received from going to these things, I was able to bring some of that back to the community to kind of see, like, here's what's coming up, friends. Like, this is what you can get into. So it was a lot of just free exposure, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, and like, looking you up online and everything, like, you're associated with some like fairly big players in like the online scene. So like, it seems like there's probably some pretty good exposure for you getting out there. Oh shoot, I'm totally blanking on the one collective. Well, there's the Rose.
Rose Gauntlet Foundation. Yeah. And they are a wonderful nonprofit organization that actually brings resources and community spaces for those underserved folks. And there's a lot of people within the gaming industry that have helped make that collective happen. And, you know, there was other folks in the gaming sphere that were came alongside me for that support and whatnot. And so there's a lot of folks that too long to list, but they know who they are because I still stay connected with them. But the beauty of it is also with an online space, I was able to reach not only here locally in our community, but like worldwide, essentially. Like now I have friends in the UK and in Australia and in parts of Asia, and it's just fantastic. So I think that was definitely one of those that helped grow and make those connections and see the beauty that it's like everyone can come to the table to play something.
You're helping other people as well make those connections, because I'm sure if the same people keep showing up for your streams, they're going to start making friends with each other. And then they will have friends from England and Australia and across the world.
Yeah.
So what do you view as your responsibility when you're presenting the game? Is it like information? Is it entertainment? Like what role are you trying to play here for people?
I think it's a combination of a lot of those things, Nate. First and foremost, I want to be welcoming and inviting. I want them to be someone that they can turn on their computer. They can log onto my stream and see like this is a friendly face. This is someone that I actually want to sit down at a table and play a game with. Right. So I wanted to be approachable. I wanted to be friendly and entertaining. I mean, thankfully, having the radio experience that I did, there was a lot of me just, you know, I was fine talking to a screen and knowing no one was going to respond to me. So that did not bother me in the slightest. I actually brought in some of my radio knowledge to some of my streaming friends because they were like, I don't know how to small talk. Like, how do you do that? You know? And so having that expertise, but also I wanted to bring the knowledgeability of folks that didn't feel comfortable asking those questions, because there are some rule books, I mean, you both probably know, and board games, that you're like, why am I reading a giant manual? Like, this is just so overwhelming. So being able to break that down in ways that are easier to digest, I think, was also a big part for me, too, because that's a lot of barrier as well for people coming to the table. It's just like, I can't play this giant game. There's no way. So giving them that opportunity. So I wanted to kind of be that bridge for those folks.
I think the rules is the worst part of learning a new board game. I get him to explain the rules to me and I still hate it. I'm like, are you just talking nonsense to me right now?
I now have two shirts that have been gifted to me that say, I read the rules so you don't have to.
Oh, nice.
So apparently I have a brand that I'm working on here amongst family and friends.
That's awesome.
Going to do a quick reset and then we'll just come right back. So you're listening to KBOO Portland. If you're just tuning in, I'm Nate here with James, and this is Winner's Bias. We're talking to Jesse Damon of Community Connection Gaming and Board Game Twitch Streamer. So I guess before we go into other things, I just want to, you've already answered some of our base questions going through things, which is, wonderful. But there's, one frivolous one I wanted to talk about and one, that I think sort of expands upon what we were talking about so earlier. And one is like, so in your advocacy, have you seen any changes in the hobby in those years that you've been like working to sort of broaden it? Hello, this is your host, Nate, checking in from the future. We had an emergency alert happen during one of Jesse's answers, and Jesse so kindly re-recorded, and so I apologize for the change in audio quality, but the answer was really important, I felt, to get out there. So enjoy, and then we'll be back to the regular show.
Yes, I have. It has been a slow growth, which I think has been the hardest thing for me to swallow, but I have had folks come alongside me at events and online and said now they feel more comfortable going to their local game stores, or they feel okay taking that game off the shelf and putting it on their table. But it is definitely not an overnight shift. There is definitely going to be more growth that's going to be happening, and it's going to take time, right? But I am seriously thankful for the amount of appreciation and support that I have been given, knowing that there are folks out there that have seen my advocacy and my work and have felt more confident to play board games or to be at those events.
And then I guess the more frivolous one is, what's your favorite game? Or do you have a game that you think everyone should play?
Yeah. So I was thinking about this, Nate, and I was like, oh my goodness, there's so many that I want. So I'm going to mention two. One that I think is very approachable for any gamer level to play. And then there's another one that, if you've already been in the gaming scene for a while, one that I definitely think you should check out. So first and foremost, I'm going to start with a game from Uwe Rosenberg. It's called Second Chance. It's basically a Tetris drawing game. Everyone has their own blank sheet of paper. They're drawing Tetris shapes, so polyominoes. And the goal is to try to get the least amount of empty squares on your grid. How that happens is you flip over two cards, you pick one of the two shapes on the card, and you draw it on your paper. Simple as that. However, if there's ever a time when you cannot fit one of those two cards, you ask for a second chance. And only you can get a second chance of a card, and if you can draw that shape, then you're still in the game. If not, then you're out, and you go through the process of counting all of your empty squares. The deck is very short. However, there is a little player aid that shows you what pieces are in the deck, so you can kind of mitigate what's coming, what has already been played. That way you can strategize where your pieces fall. That was one of the top games that I played with my family over Zoom during the pandemic. So Second Chance, Uwe Rosenberg, highly recommend that one. The second one I will say is one that people might not know about, but is one of my all-time favorite games. It's called Lost Cities, but it's the board game version. Not the dice game version, not the two-player card game version. It is called the board game version. It is from Reiner Knizia, the good doctor. I swear, I love his games, but I think he just, like, wakes up in the morning and he has, like, five different board game ideas that just come out. It is a racing game. You are playing cards in sequential order. Basically, on this giant board, you're discovering temples like Indiana Jones. However, the cards that you play on consecutive turns must be equal to or greater than the value that you've already played. The kicker is that each track of the different temples that you're playing at start on negative point values. So you need to move your little adventurers up the tracks at least three or four spots in order to receive positive points. Because if not, then you're getting negative points. I love playing this game. I played it recently in Philadelphia when I went to PAX Unplugged. I introduced it to several people, and they were just so frustrated because they wanted that one card that just didn't come out yet. And but it's laughing, it's good fun. I don't know if you can find it in print anymore because the card game, the dice game, kind of got more notoriety, but definitely check out, if you can, local library, local game store, Lost Cities, the board game.
Awesome, thank you.
So I wanted to go back to when you said your partner moved from like the Fred Meyer's Target games to the hobby games. Can you remember the specific game that helped you, Trance, to move to the hobby games where you're like, actually, this is what I want to do. This is the way I like.
Yeah. So for us collectively, it was a game called Mice and Mystics from Jerry Hawthorne. It was what they call a campaign game where you go through a game and you play certain chapters. But what was really cute is that we were all mice in medieval times and you're trying to save your king who's human. So you're all humans, but you get transformed by this evil queen into mice. And so you're exploring this castle trying to save the king. It came with little tiny mice miniatures, which I just fell in love with because I'm really crafty and I like doing art projects. And so like having miniatures to paint was like, yes, definitely, 100%. I would say that game for sure was one of those that we could play it collectively together because we didn't play a lot of cooperative games. A lot of the hobby games that you see in mass markets are not cooperative. So that was one of the first ones that I was like, yep, this is for me. And I would also say there's another game called Elder Sign. It's a dice game. It's a press your luck game. It has H.P. Lovecraft theming, which I'm not all for at all. I swear it could have any other theme in the world, but I love the mechanics of that game. It's dice rolling. It's just a lot of fun.
Awesome. So we actually have a question. Oh,
we have one
here, and it leads in quite nicely to one thing you wanted to discuss about board game stores as local gaming hubs, and the person's asking, how can I find game stores for playing table games in Cornelius, Hillsboro, and Forest Grove? And I don't know if you have answers about that, but I know we do want to talk about the importance of game stores in the gaming hobby and communities.
Yeah.
But, so do you know of any stores in those areas other than just, like, look online?
I don't, unfortunately, because the Portland metro area is so saturated that I just, that's my knowledge base. I will say, though, if you do have, if you look up on like meetup.com or things like that, a lot of times there are folks that are in the gaming space that maybe meet in a pub, or they meet at a library or things like that. And then those folks, I would say, get connected into your local community first by one of those meetups or those Facebook groups.
And I think GameCon at House on the Hill is out in Beaverton or Hillsboro.
Yes, Beaverton,
yeah. So that's like out in that way, which is a huge board game meetup as well. But yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about like the value of board game stores in our communities.
Nice segue, Nate.
Yeah.
So now that I've done, you know, the Twitch streaming and things, because of those connections that I've made and the community that I've built, I have been fortunate enough to get a job here at a local game store. I work at Red Castle Games, which is in Southeast Portland. And it's been one of the highlights of my year so far, even though we're still in January. I have become like the board gaming expert. And so with my knowledge base that I've accumulated over the years and the community I've built there, it's been awesome to see how some of those games have been going on to the shelves. One thing that folks don't really realize is that sometimes local game stores are your way to find your community. And like-minded people are there. I will say curating that safe space is something that I strongly wish that every game store had. I wish we can get away from the dark dungeony caves that some of these game stores can be. I wish we can also get away from that locker room smell that some of these game stores can have. But it is a work in progress, right? So I'm really, really excited for how Red Castle has had these events and things too. One of which, and speaking of board games, is going to be on February 2nd. We are doing a locals only gaming expo where I'm inviting local game designers to come and demo their games at the store, and customers can come in and play the demos and even get possible discounts on those games themselves, so they can not only support local, but they could see these familiar faces of like, hey, you design and you actually live in my neighborhood. That's so cool that you're a game designer. So I really value the sense of community. I know for parents, it's a safe space that they can take their kiddos to. After school spaces, at Red Castle, we have a wonderful Dungeons and Dragons camp for kids. So they just come in and play a campaign for several hours every week. And the parents know that they're in a safe space, and they know where their kids are at. And that's huge. So there's a lot of positive benefits that can come from a local game store.
Yeah, I know I've mentioned on the show before about how my 12-year-old has been going and playing Root at a local game store. And like, it just, because I always kind of manufactured my group out of people around me. I was very lucky to have people willing to go on the journey with me. And so I didn't have to go out and find people. Mm. But now seeing like my son and his friends being like, we want to be out of the house. And having that like third space, I guess, is what it would be called, to just go for a few hours and, you know, buy a few snacks, to tell them, hey, take some money with you, so you can buy some snacks while you're there. But they're just there for hours and just hanging out. And it's like totally cool.
Yeah. I like the sound, because we talked a little bit about this before the show, but my youngest daughter loves board games. She's still a little bit too young for it right now, but I'm looking forward to the age where she can go to a board game shop to herself, and because there's people like you who are helping set up these board game shops to be for her to feel safer in them and feel more welcome for it. I'm loving that's coming along.
How old is she?
She is 8 right now, so she's got far to go. But
yeah. There's so many things for her to do.
Oh yeah,
we'll talk after the show.
Okay,
I think James just wants to leave her and go on his own way. You're someone else's problem now.
Someone else, yeah.
One of the pleasures of being a parent is when they start getting their independence, and you're just like, oh, it's quiet in here now.
And then she can drag your youngest along and then get him out of the house.
Yeah, get him playing games because he won't play games with me. Except Drew Poulter, as we were talking about that beforehand.
Yeah, no,
so
we keep talking about
the audience doesn't know what I'm talking about with Drew Poulter, but he loves that game and everyone should try to find it, it's I guess.
German ghost game.
Yep. The sweaty hand game.
Yeah.
When you do have new people come into a board game store, how do you talk to them about games? Like, how do you direct them if they're, you know, sometimes they're coming in to buy for other people, but if they're curious about it, like, how do you direct these people?
Oh, gosh, that's a great question. So I experienced my first ever Black Friday sales in retail. I've done it from the board gaming side where, like, being at a convention, so I'm used to people just flooding the tables and the booths and whatnot. But I've had a lot of experience now being at Red Castle of folks that are like, my son wants something called Twilight something. And I'm like, Twilight Imperium 4. There you go. I got it for you. Right. But what I do is I usually ask what their age is, what are things that they're into, because a lot of times that helps their attention span when it comes to games, because sometimes you're just like, okay, they have an attention span for like 10 minutes and it's like, great, I could have him play Drew Poulter because it's only going to take you a few minutes or whatever. Or if they can sit down for hours and play a video game, it's like, okay, then I think you can probably play Stardew Valley, the board game, because it's going to take a little while for you. So what I do is I like to ask them questions just a little bit about themselves. Do they like to play together with other people? Do you want to play with your kiddo? Or do you want them to be off in another room playing by themselves? Because that will also distinguish what type of game that you play, whether it's a competitive game or a cooperative game. The other thing, too, a lot of times I get with little ones that come in, you know, elementary school kiddos and things, too. The parents feel like they have to teach these kids these games, and if they don't understand the rule set, then they're just like, I'm not going to buy them. But the big thing I always like to tell parents is that with these kid games and with these growing learning games, you don't have to teach them the whole rule book. You can just show them the pieces and they can do imaginative play for a while, or you can incorporate, you know, we're going to do counting. You know, here's a perfect example is a game called Monza. It's a racing game and you're rolling dice and they're all different colors and you're supposed to move the cars to connect the different colors. If you don't want to roll all six dice, don't roll all six dice. Roll the first one, you know, and just and have them engage with the pieces first. And then as they get more involved and more wanting to learn more about it, then you can introduce some of those rule books. So some of those general questions I like to ask them to kind of help with that.
Awesome.
That might be a good idea for me, because when I play games with my daughter, I probably follow the rules more than I should. We were playing Outfox once, and she's like, oh, can we use all the chickens, or the chickens can be the fox? And I was like, no, that's not the rules.
Yeah.
But now I should probably be like, you know what? Yeah, you have fun. Don't listen to me.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it looks like we're about out of time. Jesse, thank you so much for being here with us. It was a pleasure. And thank you all for listening to Winner's Bias. If you would like to comment on the show, have any questions, or suggest discussion topics, you can email us at winnersbias@kbu.org. I'm Nate.
And I'm James. And remember, it's not about the games you play, but all the connections you make along the way. Have a good one. Here we go.